This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
Moving from one temporary home to another with an occasional stint living in a car isn't exactly the roadmap to academic success. In fact, it makes it almost impossible.
He said, "I purposely sat you next to the smartest kid in all of my classes. The least you could have done was cheat off of his papers."
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll hear the story of a homeless student in Washington State. We'll also find out that all those times your teacher told you to sit up straight, well, that was pretty good advice. And we'll spend an academic minute separating the good exercise from the not so good. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. ...27,000 students in Washington State alone are facing homelessness. Kira McFarland is one of them. She's gone from house to motel and back dozens of times. There were times her family didn't have enough to eat, didn't have money to wash their clothes, couldn't even afford toilet paper. Moving so many times made it hard for Kira to learn, and she almost dropped out until she got one last chance to make it. Chris O.T. from the program Radioactive reports.
This is Kira as she gets up in the morning.
I'm tired and just want to go back to bed.
Just your average, nerdy high school gamer girl. She's 5'4", blonde, and usually pretty happy. Oh, and she also lives with me and my family, but you couldn't tell that, or what she's been through, just by looking at her. See, Kira has gone through some pretty tough things in her life, from moving to her parents divorcing. She lived with her father and brothers, where money was always a problem.
We were running low on food. You know, there was times where it was going to the food bank and coming up with whatever we could, you know, pawning things for a quick buck. And I mean, it was worse than that. It was having piles of unclean clothes for months that had never gotten the chance to be washed because we had no money to wash them. We had no washer or dryer available. So I was wearing, and my brothers, everyone, were wearing these clothes that, you know, we kind of just picked and we're like, well, does this smell okay? Is this good enough?
Sometimes things got so bad that they didn't even have toilet paper.
And that's the point where I just started feeling disgusting. I just started feeling this awful jealousy towards everyone who was clean.
This led to problems in school, especially math.
I've always had a problem with math because I was moving a lot in my life. And I wasn't able to learn all of my multiplications. Like, I can tell you truthfully, I probably only know it up to, like, fives. And that hurts.
And some people treated her like trash. Freshman year, one of her teachers said...
He said, "I purposely sat you next to the smartest kid in all of my classes. The least you could have done was cheat off of his papers."
This obliterated Kira's confidence. She felt like there was no one she could go to for help. She failed her math classes, but still passed her freshman year. The next year, all of her classes started to take a drastic turn, downwards. She got too many Fs to graduate on time, so she transferred schools.
I found an alternative high school called Nova, and I was attending there for about 3 months when everything just crashed. I mean, it was falling apart, but this was the point where it finally just broke down.
What do you mean? Like your home life?
Yeah, we ended up having to leave because they were tearing down the building.
I see. So why was it being torn down?
It was going to be turned into a battered women's shelter for the Salvation Army.
She learned that her family was out of the building after a phone call from her father.
That phone call really broke me completely. I ended up having a breakdown in the middle of school. Because it happened again.
See, this kind of thing happened a lot in Kira's life. First time was when she was 5, and losing her house was almost an annual thing. Some places her family had been were better than others, but none were really great. Here's Kira's father to recount some of the places they've been.
Salvation Army hooked us up with some flexible landlords who were working with Section 8, I guess, at the time. And they moved us to South Park. And from South Park, we went to Judkins. And then from Judkins, we moved to Cherry.
Kira's family has also lived in Bothell, Everett, Bellevue, Greenwood, Lake City, and Georgetown. Kira's father lost his job at a metal mill when she was young, and says that he was not able to get another job for nearly a decade because of health conditions. The most severe ones are his heart condition and diabetes.
As the diabetes has progressed further, it's made things a little bit more difficult as far as employment goes.
Even after she had found a place to stay, she ended up leaving Nova after 2 more years of failing classes. She felt that it was the same situation at a different school. Housing was still unstable, and she missed a lot of classes. At this point, she had all but given up. She thought of dropping out and getting a GED, or even quitting altogether. And then I told her about Middle College High School, a last chance for her. She's been going there for 3 months now, and she feels more at home there than any other school because she's gotten support and is with other students who face similar challenges. And things are going better than before, in a surprising way.
I really enjoy my math class now. I'm pretty excited that I'm learning and I can learn and I'm understanding it.
I'll do this one next. So it's 5x minus 17 equals 123.
Not only does she understand it, but her math teacher, Marilyn Philly, had this to say.
There was a lot of, I hate this, at the beginning. And I think once she realized that math in this class is about a personal program where you do exactly what you need at your level on the computer, she got more comfortable. And not only can she learn math, but she could learn anything.
So we're going to add 17 to 17. And 120.
Kira has gained the confidence to solve problems she faces every day, and that will help her accomplish her goals of being a professional chef.
I think my biggest thing that I hope to accomplish is graduating from high school this year, and then moving on.
For Radioactive, this is Chris Odie. 40
divided by 5 equals 28.
Okay.
And an update on Kira's dad, Michael McFarland. He recently found a job and is moving into permanent housing. Still to come, remember all those times your teacher told you, hey, sit up straight? Well, we now know that was pretty good advice. That's up next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. You can start your own archive with a CD copy of the program. Call toll-free 800-323-9262. Be sure to ask for The Best of Our Knowledge, number 1262. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. If you're anything like me, you are constantly being told by elementary school teachers to stop slouching and sit up straight. Recently, you may have heard some health reports that said too much sitting, that's just plain old sitting down, is bad for your health. Well, according to Esther Gokhale, it's not that you're sitting too much, it's just that we're sitting wrong. Gokhale dealt with years of crippling pain and unsuccessful back surgery to become a highly successful practitioner and teacher of good posture. Her methods are practiced in Silicon Valley and have been featured in the New York Times. She was recently the featured speaker at the evening lecture series at the Institute for Human and Machine Cognition in Pensacola, Florida. She also spoke with the Institute's communications manager, Carl Wernicke.
How did you get into the business of teaching posture?
The hard way, from having severe back problems that didn't respond to any of the conventional or alternative techniques around. So I had to hunt for a way. I was desperate.
What caused your back problems? Can you give us just a little description of the situation?
Happened in the 9th month of pregnancy. I had a badly herniated disc, and it was a mess. I had horrible sciatica and a huge herniation.
And you underwent what I've seen described as basically unsuccessful surgery?
Unsuccessful everything, including surgery.
So that led you to search for a better way?
Well, it was that or be a cripple for the rest of my life. I'd already resigned to not having any more kids and things like that, which changed.
Now, standing and sitting are basic human functions. How do we get them wrong?
You've already started on the right foot by saying they're basic human functions, because some people don't realize that. We've sort of taken to escaping them. You know, it's like sitting is bad. And so we have to, and the next position is the best position. It's like, you know, a series of escapes. And the truth is that both sitting and standing are healthy positions if done well, don't need to be escaped from, and have their own separate benefits and particular nuances.
Why don't we instinctively do them correctly and keep doing them correctly?
Well, we do them correctly when we're very young. But modern culture undermines that innate wisdom. And it begins very early with very poorly designed baby furniture and the way kids are carried in modern times sort of imprints their brain in a negative fashion. So they learn to slump early. And then we're copying each other. So once the baseline shifts, our models are incorrect. And then what's happened over the last century is that this what's average in our culture has come to mistakenly to be considered normal and even ideal. So we're off, and the signs are pointing the wrong way as well.
What's the impact of incorrect posture, especially from sitting?
Structure is so central to human function. You know, the most obvious connections are to the musculoskeletal system. You damage discs and you overtax incorrect muscles and cause tensions. But then it extends to physiology because you have poor circulation, respiration, elimination, etc., etc. And modern research is showing that it also connects very intimately with psychological health. The way you carry yourself changes the way you feel. It changes your testosterone and cortisol levels, and it certainly comes across, you come across to other people differently.
There's been a growing body of research recent times about, you know, the damaging impacts of sitting, and, you know, especially today with so many people at computers for so long. Is it just sitting per se, or is it sitting incorrectly?
I think it's sitting incorrectly, sitting for too long, unpunctuated by breaks. You know, I think people need to sit well, they need to have supportive furniture, they need to get up and move around periodically. I say every 15 minutes, and it doesn't have to be a long break, but it has to get your G-forces going, and it has to get your blood going, and it has to not just wind you down into a slump and depression and obesity and metabolic syndrome, etc., etc.
So how did you go about figuring out, you know, the proper way to do it? I mean, what was involved in that?
Well, first I studied everybody else's ideas on the matter. I mean, once I made a decision that this is not responding to any of the Band-Aid approaches, including surgery, and it's got to be something I'm doing incorrectly. It just didn't make sense to me that in my mid-20s I was so poorly designed that I was going to fall apart and not have a full life. And I had grown up in India. My mother was very much an Indophile. And so I had had early experience that people living close to the earth have some innate wisdom. And so the methods out there that study people, functional people, resonated with me. And I studied all of those. And did a lot of travel, which has been in my history anyway, since I'm of mixed background. I've been juggling East and West all my life. And there's wisdom to be gleaned. And so it's a mixture of searching the medical literature, studying what's out there, observing people in the field, taking photographs, film, interviewing them. And then I had my natural lab. Since I was a healer, I was an acupuncturist, which just happens to draw exactly the crowd that, you know, has pain and so on. So I could put my ideas into test very easily. And I was astonished by how well simple things like tweaks in sitting and lying and bending and walking how strong that effect is. And this is something everybody needs to know. This has just got to go out there. And so that set out this long journey of writing a book, which was difficult for me, and creating videos and creating products. It was a huge learning curve. I decided somewhere along the way that I have to design a chair, because people keep asking me, you know, what chair do you recommend? Well, none. And so it's been one learning curve after the other, but I love that. So
how long would you estimate that it took you to really substantively come up with what's now called the Gokhale method, and to where you felt like it was fully formed?
It's a work in progress. It is never going to be fully formed. Right now, I am exploring the direction of using technology to help people learn better, because, you know, to give the teachers a long arm. I'm convinced that this really should be done hands-on. But, you know, what about when the student goes home and after they finish their course and so on? So it's never going to be fully formed. But I would say it took me about 20 years to feel like I had a method that was really ready to be articulated. And
where would you put this in sort of the whole pantheon of medical care? Do you consider yourself within the realm sort of traditional medicine, or, you know, did you have to step outside of it? You know, was this something that you just simply didn't find in sort of existing medicine, or do you really feel like you're within the traditions of general medicine?
I've always operated from first principles. I don't care if it's alternative or conventional. It's got to work. And it's got to be logically based. I was trained that way. I have a biochemistry degree from Princeton and solid science, and it needs to make sense, and it needs to be efficient. And so I don't care which realm it's in, but I've always been embraced by conventional medicine practitioners. They're our major referral source. And right now, the largest clinical entity in where I live is working with including it in their in their regular offerings. So, you know, the mainstream is embracing us.
You know, we always read about how quickly the human body can recover. I think when you work with people who are suffering from whatever it is, back pain or hip problems or leg problems, whatever, you know, the manifestations are, once you're able to get them sitting and standing correctly, how quickly do you see a reversal of the problems?
So it's true and false that humans are tremendously self-healing. We have to get out of our own way. You know, if you continue to put the same compressive forces on your disc that caused the problems there in the first place, then how are they going to heal themselves? They're not even vascular tissue. You know, they depend on us keeping the height in them so that they can be nourished. And that goes for every muscle and tissue in the body. So, yes, if we give ourselves a chance, we're tremendously self-healing. And it can be fast. I mean, we see results after lesson one in our course that reverse problems people have had for 2 decades. This is not uncommon. It's not always that way. You know, we have a course that is 6 lessons, which we don't think is asking for much. And then we really expect to see life-changing effects. But sometimes it's quicker than that.
Have you ever had any negative reaction from in medical circles, or is this something that you know, other doctors recognize as valuable right off the bat?
We've had a very strong adoption from internal medicine, family practice, physicians. We've had a lot of buy-in from surgeons and physiatrists and so on, but not that many referrals. And the same is true for chiropractors and physical therapists, I would say. But the way, you know, medicine is set up in our country, people are kind of set against each other in a competitive way, which is very unfortunate. So hopefully we'll bypass all of that, and we'll all be talking the same language and reinforcing patients, and in our case, we consider them students' welfare instead of, you know, just scrounging around for profit.
Esther Gokhale's latest book is called 8 Steps to a Pain-Free Back. She spoke with the best of our knowledge's Carl Wernicke. So it appears you can not only sit wrong, you can also exercise wrong. That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Welcome to the Academic Minute. I'm Lynn Pascarella, president of Mount Holyoke College. Most people think the more exercise you do, the better. But as Paul Essiero, professor at Skidmore College's Health and Exercise Science Department, suggests, it's the quality, not the quantity, that makes an effective fitness program.
Most exercise is good for you, but some kinds are better than others. We tend to focus on the quantity of exercise we do, but it's actually the quality of exercise that matters most. That's what we found in a recent study. We divided 59 overweight middle-aged men and women into three groups and gave each a different exercise regimen along with three servings of lean protein. One did very little exercise, another did intensive resistance training 4 times per week, the third followed a multidimensional regimen that included resistance exercise, interval sprints, stretching, and endurance exercise, I refer to as PRIZE. On every measure, the PRIZE group showed the greatest benefit, the greatest reductions in weight, abdominal fat, and waist circumference, and the greatest improvements in lean body mass, blood pressure, blood sugar, and insulin. The PRIZE system works because along with the protein intake, each of the 4 exercise routines targets a different physiological health or performance outcome. These include enhanced cellular metabolism, protein synthesis, fat utilization, hormonal balance, blood sugar levels, and mood state. These results support a rethinking of current assumptions about exercise, which place too much focus on the quantity of exercise people do rather than the quality of that exercise. You can't just lift weights or do only the treadmill or elliptical machine and be healthy. A good exercise routine will include the full range of fitness components that contribute most to overall health and physical performance. Remember, keep your eye on the prize.
That was Paul Arciero of Skidmore College. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
Production support for the Academic Minute comes from Newman's Own Foundation in partnership with Mount Holyoke College. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.